Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 365 of the podcast. And it's Wednesday, 28th of February, as I record this early, as I'm heading off to the Amalfi Coast in southern Italy for a walking holiday. That is, if we make it past the Beast of the East Siberian snowstorm. And of course, southern Italy and the Amalfi Coast are well known for blue seas and blue sky and just gorgeous times, but it's going to be freezing and raining. But hey, you know, going for a walk, very important. So today I'm talking to Mark Dawson about five important things that authors need to know about self-publishing. So whether you are new on the author journey or just want to revisit the basics, I hope you will find this useful. And of course, always fun to talk to you, Mark. We think very similarly about many things, but we also have quite different perspectives. So this hopefully will be interesting. And I also have a webinar coming up with Mark in the run-up to his relaunch of the Self-Publishing 101 course. So we'll be doing a live session on how to get your first 10 book reviews, or maybe your next 10 if you're still struggling. And between us, Mark and I have 50 books and over 5,000 reviews. So we have learned a thing or two over the years. So come and join us on Monday, 12th of March at 4 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK, as it's in that weird period in between the US changing time zones and the UK being a bit behind. So register at thecreativepen.com/March12, so MARCH12. And as ever, we'll also do a live Q&A, so you can ask us questions about whatever you want to on self-publishing. And those of you who've been joining me recently on webinars know we generally have some fun. I usually have some wine, and at that time in the evening, Mark might have a beer as well. So that normally makes things lots of fun. We are professional, but we also have fun. So that is coming up. In Futurist Stuff today, very interesting article. So a blog I really like is digitaltrends.com, and they've reported on an artist called Taryn Southern, whose new album is produced entirely by AI. And this is, it's a brilliant article, and I'll link to it in the show notes, because it goes over how she uses the AI. She uses four different AIs, including IBM's Watson, to go through an iterative process. So using AI as a tool. And so it's not like she says, okay, AI, create a song. That's not it at all. It's like she feeds in her information and then it gives her different iterative examples, and then she picks and chooses and kind of moves on from there. So, and I've talked about this before, about using AI as a tool and using the sort of variations on creative work that she selects from. And she, at the end, she says, also interesting about copyright. She says, I'm working on a song right now that's basically an ode to revolution, and I call it my blockchain song. A song inspired by the blockchain revolution. Obviously, Taryn is a younger millennial. those of you who still haven't caught on with blockchain stuff, but this is interesting. So she says, I've been feeding Watson various songs as far back as the 1700s that represent revolution, trying to see what it can glean from those songs to make a new anthemic revolution song. And then the interviewer asks her about using some of the Beatles songs, and she talks about the rules around teaching AI based on copyrighted works is still a grey area. So that is fascinating to me, because I've had this discussion. I was when I was in Oregon last year, I had this discussion with Dean Wesley Smith about, you know, who owns, if you're using, let's say you're using IBM Watson to create something new, who owns the copyright? Do you share the copyright with an AI? And then what about who owns the AI? So IBM in that case. And then this other question is around teaching AI based on copyrighted works. How does that affect copyright? So obviously, if I want to use an AI to help me write, I could feed it my 17 novels. And the example that there has been is the J.K. Rowling bot that came up with a new Harry Potter based on being fed J.K. Rowling works. Of course, if you feed it your own to create another of your own, then there's no problem with that. But what if I decided to feed an AI all of Dan Brown's books and then create something for me? How right would that be? Would that fit with copyright? How ethically right, let alone legally right? So this is a really interesting emerging area, and copyright law is going to have to come up against this at some point, as well as our own personal creative process. I am definitely going to use AI as a tool, as I use all the other technical tools around in my creative process. And as Taryn says towards the end, they really do make my life easier as the artist, because I can focus on so many of the other things that I love to focus on in the creation process. And I totally agree with that too. So much of this technology is about freeing us up to do the things we love to do. So awesome. And I will link to that in the show notes. So a personal update this week. I had a quite a sad moment as the map shop, which is around the corner from me that I have walked past since we moved to Bath, sort of 2.5 years now, I've walked past almost every single day, that map shop has closed. Now the owner is an older guy, so I don't know why it closed, but maybe he finished, he'd had enough. But if you have read my book, Map of Shadows, it is based on my main character, Sienna, actually inheriting that map shop on the death of her grandfather. And that's the opening few chapters. So what it sort of reflected, I was reflecting on the nature of creativity and the nature of the temporal things that happen and how fast time flies. And basically, if we hadn't moved, maybe we moved to Bath next week, I would have completely missed that map shop. Now, there are other map shops in Bath, but it's the fact that it's on this particular pedestrianised street. And if you've read Map of Shadows, I describe that street. It's the location of it in, it's right next to the ancient sort of druid energy lines, the ley lines, and also the circus and the Royal Crescent, which are these Masonic symbolic architecture in Bath. It's just a very resonant area. And I don't know if I would have created that about another map shop. So the whole world, the whole map walker universe came from being here in this time and moving past that shop in the moment. So I wanted to encourage you to remember that things change. And if you walk past something and you feel drawn to it, take a picture, write a note, capture it, because things change and that may well have completely disappeared the next time you walk past that. So that's my deep and meaningful creative moment this week. I've also, obviously, it's only the middle of the week. It's like Wednesday lunchtime as I'm recording this. So it's not like I've had a lot of this week to go through yet. But I have, I'm mainly scheduling everything and prepping things to go away. Also getting over a bit of a cold if my voice is a bit flaky. I've also been starting to look at the nonfiction survey results and really thinking about how that will shape the next draft when I get back. And thanks to everyone who's entered so far. And you can still add your questions at thecreativepen.com/nonfiction survey. And of course, I'll do a random draw for some of my signed books on 11th of March. So please check out the survey before 11th of March 2018. So thecreativepen.com/nonfiction survey. I have also been doing some more videos. I did a big chunk of video recording, batching my time on Monday, released a video on how to use Grammarly to improve your writing and another on how authors make a living, as well as some other stuff. So check out my channel, youtube.com/thecreativepen, if you like videos. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Remember to let me know what you're doing while you're listening to the show, and send photos at The Creative Pen on Twitter. And also, oh, thanks to people who have been posting pictures of my books on my Instagram channel. I've kind of only just discovered that button on Instagram where you can see when people tag you. So thank you, and please continue to tag me on Instagram at JF Pen Author. I am JF Pen on Instagram. I should have got The Creative Pen, obviously, but I try and keep Instagram for my fiction. Anyway, back to your emails and tweets and comments. Peter Blythe, a regular tweeter and commenter, said, "Your trouble writing the nonfiction book really resonated with me, and I was glad to hear it. Though I wish you well, I was glad to hear someone of your status still suffers from this stuff. It's not just me." And if you missed that, I said that I was reading my draft of the nonfiction, of how to write nonfiction, and it was just boring me. I was so bored. So I'm now attempting to bring that book alive with my own personal stories. Eliza Peak said, "Really love listening to the interview with Chris Ducker. He's so energetic and motivating. As someone who is trying to emulate this type of business model, this interview was full of great information. Glad you enjoyed it, Eliza." Lucas Kotkowski says, "Listening to the podcast, gearing up for the second day of MWC 2018, which I think is Mobile World Conference or something like that, which looks really fascinating, like all things mobile. I usually listen to it while washing dishes, though." Sarah Kingsley says, "I love your boat metaphor, considering I live and write on a boat in New Zealand. Just wish I could write as fast as the wind here in Wellington." And if you don't know Wellington in New Zealand, it is a very windy place. It's on the straits between the two islands. So yeah, wonderful place. And just a couple more. Meg DeCamp says, "Listening to the terrific podcast episode while walking in late season snow last week. Looks like Portland, Oregon." And finally, Eileen Omosa says, "Here's why I look forward to Mondays. Learned from Joanna about Google's next billion internet users and how to build a you-based business." Thanks, Eileen. And yes, so please tweet me, email me, add a comment to the show notes. I'd love to hear from you and where you are in the world. And pictures are always cool. So today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark, and I use Ingram Spark for my extended distribution and helps me get my print books into physical bookstores. Amusingly, Jonathan, my husband and I, we have a small press, Curl Up Press, which is at curlupress.com, which is the sort of the site that people come to if they don't know that we're also the authors. But it's funny, we had an inquiry through curlupress.com asking about, amusingly again, successful self-publishing for a bookstore in New Jersey. And I was able to direct them to the catalogue to order it, because successful self-publishing is a free ebook, but it's also available in print through Ingram. Now, a little tip here: for if you use KDP print for your paperbacks, you won't even reach some of the Amazon stores, which is interesting. I'm sure they'll eventually roll it out. But for extended distribution for print, using Ingram Spark alongside KDP print or CreateSpace is how I personally do print products these days. And I also do more print products than I used to do. I do large print for the Penny Appleton romance and workbooks for my non-fiction. So lots of ideas for print. You can also do hardbacks through Ingram. And I really want to do a hardback. It's on my list. I also had a question this week about the difference between Ingram Spark and Lightning Source. For all intents and purposes, for our purposes, they are essentially the same thing. They are the same company, but ingramspark.com is the way into the Lightning Source ecosystem for small publishers like us. So it's your content. Do more with it through ingramspark.com. So thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Ellie Deereen, Cynthia Cruz and Harper T. Weathers. And thanks to Julie Pickerel for increasing her pledge. I really do appreciate the Patreon support. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. So you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month, or some more coffee a month. if you like, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio. And I will be doing that when I get back from Italy. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get into the interview. Today, I'm here with Mark Dawson. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Jo. How are you?
I'm good. So just a little introduction in case people don't know Mark. Mark is an international best-selling thriller author. He's sold over 1 million books and makes a seven-figure income from his writing. He also teaches authors how to self-publish and market successfully through his site and podcast at selfpublishingformula.com. And today we're talking about the top five things that authors should know about self-publishing. Because Mark, you know, both of us get emails every day, don't we, from people just starting out.
We do, yeah. Look, and also from people who've been going for maybe a little bit of time and it's not working for them quite right, and they want to look into what they should be doing differently to improve their sales and build their careers.
Mm, absolutely. Okay, so I've got, as I said, five questions. So the first one is about discoverability. And, you know, Amazon is the biggest bookstore in the world. So we'll just base our discussion around that to start with. But how should an author ensure that their books can reach the right kind of readers? What are the fundamentals they have to have in place?
I think you've got to, let's assume that the book is a good book to start with. So we'll take that as read. I don't teach craft, I teach marketing. So I start with the moment that someone has written the end on their manuscript and they're ready to go. From that stage, you need to know when to take off your creative person's hat and put on your business person's hat. And that is a shift, not every author is comfortable doing that, but it is a mindset that needs to be developed in order to maximize the chances of selling your book. And, you know, even the use of the word selling can be a little bit off-putting for some people. But the way I would look at it is you've got your book that you maybe have worked for months or years on. It's now you're trying to get it into the hands of as many readers as possible. And there are some things that you'll need to do now, some marketing promotional things that you'll need to do. Otherwise, the odds are against that book ever doing very much. So you need to have that mindset ready to go. So you're ready to actually start getting that book into the hands of people who love it.
Mm. And I think that's the issue, isn't it? Like many people keep that writer hat on and forget that when we're talking about self-publishing successfully, they need to put on a publisher hat. So let's just talk about some of the basics. So if people are looking at publishing in a specific category, you know, should the cover match? You know, what should they be thinking around keywords, that type of thing? You know, the basic stuff they need to get right.
Yeah, it's not difficult to get the covers right because, I mean, I work with a cover designer. I've worked with him for the last 3 or 4 years. He used to do covers for people like Stephen King and John le Carré, and he approaches it in a very professional fashion. So what he'll do, I write thrillers, so when we rejected all of my books a couple of years ago, the first thing he did was to look through the bestseller lists on Amazon. All this information is very, very easy to get hold of course, just a question of typing in a URL and browsing across your genre. And then you can start to look at the kinds of tropes that are common on those covers. So for mine, I write thrillers like Lee Child. So you might have a landscape with a single figure walking off into the distance. That's a bit of a cliche, but there's a reason why cliches are cliches. It's because they're shorthand for a way to tell potential readers what your book is going to be like. So you could be clever if you want. When I started out, I thought, I know best about covers. I'm going to have this amazing cover that will look like nothing else available. And then it took me a while to realize, why is my book selling? And it's because no one knew what the book was about. So you do need to do your research and then find someone who can put a cover together that meets all of those criteria. And then as you're uploading the book, there are other ways that you can increase the chance that it will be visible when it launches. And you've mentioned metadata. That's certainly something that you can look at. So getting into the right categories, for example. So you don't want to put a romance into the thriller category, for obvious reasons, or vice versa. So you need to make sure you get into those categories. There are some strategies that you can use to actually increase the number of categories that you're in from the two that Amazon allows you to, I think, up to about 12. And it is as simple as emailing Amazon KDP support and just asking to be placed in those categories. And that will increase the chances of people are browsing the category lists, finding you in other categories other than, for example, espionage, which would be where you'd find some of my books. And then you also need to look at things like search terms. So if you imagine the customer looking for a new book to read, they go onto Amazon, they might go to that search box at the top and type in, for me again, espionage thriller. So one thing that I might want to do is to make sure that the 7 data fields that Amazon lets you populate with keywords reflects the kinds of things that readers would be entering if they're trying to find a book like mine. So it could be espionage thriller, it could be action and adventure. Those would all be separate keywords. And just think about that. You can spend an awful lot of time on that kind of research. My counsel on that would be not to spend too much time, because you could go down the rabbit hole forever, basically. But it is worth spending maybe half an hour or so just doing a little bit of research and trying to figure out what the kinds of search terms that those readers might be using. And there are some useful tools and tips that are available to short circuit that process.
Yeah, and I think what you said there about spending too much time, I mean, I think what we're encouraging people to do is self-publish. And, you know, yes, try and get these basics right. But both you and I have re-jacketed, as you said, or re-covered our books. We've both changed categories. We've both changed our keywords. We've changed our sales description. So the big point for people listening is, have a go. And then as you learn more, you can change this stuff. And that's one of the beauties of being an indie, isn't it? Like, I mean, you we've both made mistakes.
No.
Never.
No, I have. I've made plenty of mistakes. That's a really good point. This is, nothing is set in stone. You can make all kinds of mistakes, but that shouldn't, fear of making mistakes shouldn't be a reason that stops you from uploading your book and getting onto the market, because nothing is irrecoverable. You can always go back, change the blurb, as you say, change the cover. You can change the manuscript if you want. If you have a passage that you want to change, you can do that too. So you can change the price. Nothing is set in stone. It's a very, very flexible platform that enables you to make changes on the fly if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so one of the things that many new authors care most about is holding a print book in their hand. And in fact, when you start writing a book, most people have a finished print product in mind, like the like the lovely Beatrix Rose box set that is there. And I mean, that's a good example. You and I both make the most money from ebooks, but we also care about print and audio. We're not going to cover audio right now, but what are your recommendations around ebooks and print when authors are just starting out?
I would say you're absolutely right. The breakdown of income, at least for me, from ebook to print is about 95%, 5%, perhaps even 96%, 97%, 3% or 4%. So it's really weighted heavily in favor of ebooks. But I do want to have print as well. There are lots of reasons for that. Vanity is one. So I've got a shelf over there that's full of my books in print, which I can sign if I want to give them to readers as competition prizes. It's also a useful source of additional income. So as I've started to do things like Amazon marketing services ads, another way to drive traffic to your products, I am discovering that the amount of print sales that I make has gone up dramatically. So I'm probably doing 3 times or 4 times as much per month since I started running these ads. And you know, that might be maybe a couple of $1,000s. It's not to be sniffed at. Obviously, that's, you know, I make more when it comes to the ebooks. But God, when I started out, someone said you'd better sell $2,000 worth of print books. I looked at them as if they were a lunatic. But it's possible. You know, it's certainly something that you need to do. And the kind of the good takeaway, you mentioned audio there, and I know you're big on this in the same way that I am. Once you've got your assets, you've worked on a, it's a book, right? So we'll call it a book, nice fluffy word to start with. Once we've got the book and we've finished it, it becomes a product we want to sell. And that product has a number of ancillary intellectual property rights that we can exploit. So print is one, audio is one, translation rights is another, film and TV rights, that's another. You want to take the benefit of all that hard work and then sell it in as many ways as you can. I hate to think that I'm leaving anything on the table. So I'm going to try and take that intellectual property and then sell it in as many different formats as I can.
And I think, yeah, our recommendation is, yes, do ebook first, do print as well, and just stick there until until things get up to speed. And we both use CreateSpace, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. So CreateSpace, yep. Amazon's only, Amazon's platform, or KDP Print now through the KDP dashboard. I've just done my first book through that and it turned out all right. So there are options, and we should also remind people that all these self-publishing platforms are free. And that's, you know, amazing. You know, what costs money is, like you said, the cover design and editing and the preparation of the book, and I guess the marketing.
Absolutely. And one, and a really good, I think perhaps the most important thing I'd want people to take away from this conversation is, if someone asks you for money to put your book together, almost always I'd say be careful, because you don't need to spend that. There are some slightly unsavory companies out there who will charge you thousands and thousands of dollars for a box full of books, effectively, and you just don't need to spend that. It really annoys me when I see authors who have something that they've worked so hard on, they've invested so much into, being taken advantage of like that. And it isn't necessary. All the platforms, so Amazon and all the others, the print, the audio, you don't need to pay anything in order to get those books up there. So just kind of caveat emptor on that one.
Yeah. And I should just also, if people are going to use companies, then there's a watchdog by the Alliance of Independent Authors. And I've got a link for that at thecreativepen.com/watchdog. So go there if you are thinking of paying a company to publish. Okay. So there are a number of platforms for authors to publish on. Kobo, iBooks, Barnes & Noble, Nook, and a whole load more, global ones, Google Play. When might an author consider exclusivity with Amazon, and when might they consider going to wide?
That's a really difficult question. In fact, I think it's almost an impossible question to answer, because it's going to depend on the circumstances of the author, and that will vary from person to person, what they hope to get out of the exercise, all of that kind of stuff. And my advice on that is, I can't give a kind of a categorical answer, but I would say, if I was starting out again myself, I would probably start with Amazon. I'd learn that platform first, understand, just concentrate on mastering the basics of self-publishing first of all, and it will be easy to do that by concentrating on one thing at a time, because all the platforms are a little bit different. The upload process on Apple, for example, is very different from the process that Kobo or Amazon uses. So you want to concentrate on just getting that one right first, and Amazon is probably going to be your biggest market as well. It certainly is for me, although Apple is closing quite fast now. But most people will start off, and Amazon will be where they sell the most books. So it makes sense for me to think about that to start with. Now, once you've got the first 3 months out of the way, Amazon locks you in exclusively for 3 months if you want to be in their program called Select, which gives you some promotional benefits. Once you're through that three-month period, I would say have a look at whether if you're hitting your goals. And that could be sales. That's perfectly reasonable. It could be money coming in. So Amazon also enables you to join a program called Kindle Unlimited, which is effectively a subscription model where the author gets paid per page read. So you can look at that. You can also look at things like, are you getting signups to your newsletter? We will touch on that a little bit, because it's a fundamentally important part of any kind of creative professional, is the email list. And being exclusive with Amazon does slow you down probably in building that list quickly. So you might decide after that point that although you're making a bit of money, you want to accelerate the growth of your list, because that will probably end up being the foundation for your business. And down the line, if this is a long-term thing for you, that will be where you get most of your income from. Certainly the case for me.
Mm. Yeah. And I think I tend to say to people, if you have fewer than three books in a series, then, or even if you have three different books, or generally, you know, if you only have individual books, then going exclusive is a good idea, because both you and I have found that we sell more on the other platforms with a series, or at least multiple books targeted at the same market. So my nonfiction, it's not so much a series, but people buy, you know, all of them as opposed to just one. And I think, you know, those platforms are so different. So yeah, I would definitely agree with that. So one of the biggest questions we get is, a new author comes along, they upload their book to Amazon. They have no reviews, no readers, no budget, no email list, no social media platform. They pretty much, and often they have no author friends. And I look back, you know, to sort of 2006 to 2008, 2009, and I was exactly like that. You know, you were that like that once. So how do people get their book moving if they're in that situation?
Yeah, I do remember that really well, actually. And the the kind of the mind shift that you need to get into is you have to be prepared, I think, to experiment with lots of different promotional tactics. And a really good one is to give your book away for free. So when I say that when I'm speaking at conferences, you can usually look out in some room. Yeah, exactly. You'll see some people nod because they understand what loss leading means. And they've been into the supermarket and been given a tiny chunk of cheese and then would have bought a great big lump of cheese because they liked it. So the principle is the same. But on the other hand, you look into the crowd and you see some people thinking, I know what they're thinking because they've told me afterwards, using bad language. It's, I spent 2 years writing this book and now how dare you tell me to give it away for free? Which is fine. There are no right and wrong answers here, but I can say reasonably confidently that people who are stuck in that mindset are less likely to be successful than those who are prepared to experiment. So taking that loss leading example from the supermarket, what we do is we will effectively offer readers our book. They don't know who we are. They've never read us before. We've got no reviews. There's no reason for them to spend $2 or $3 or £2 or £3 on that book because who are we? But if we say you can have it free, just try it out, see if you enjoy it. Provided your book is good, and as we said right at the start, we'll assume that all of our people watching this have written a great book. And assuming that to be the case, then you can get them onto a mailing list in exchange for giving them that free book. And then when you're ready with the next book, you have a pre-selected audience who is ready to buy the book. And probably more importantly, they're ready to leave early reviews, which will then enable you to get promotions that require a certain threshold of reviews. And having those reviews will also mean it's more likely that someone who's never heard of you before, seeing maybe 20 good reviews, will think, well, those 20 people enjoyed it. I think I will give this a chance rather than moving on to the next book. So it's that kind of getting into that mindset of being prepared to speculate, to accumulate. You've got your book, now you're gonna leverage that for the benefit of your long-term career.
And it's funny because I think one of the biggest issues with this type of approach is that there's this myth in the publishing industry that you write your first book, you give it to a publisher or you self-publish it because there's so many indie stories of success and that first book is going to make you a million and everything's going to be great. So the thought of giving it away for free. But I think, you know, what you're saying is that first book, well, do you want an author career is the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
If there is only that book, then you might do things differently. But you and I are both coming from the perspective of that longer term career. Would that be right?
Yeah, I don't want to do anything else ever again. So this is, I quite like what I'm doing now. So I'm very happy. I still give away hundreds of books every day.
Mm.
And maybe that means I'm seeding 10 sales a day that I might have otherwise made. But I don't care about that because of those 100 readers, maybe 30 of them will read them, enjoy them, and will then buy 24 other books that I've got. So maybe I'm losing $20 or $30 on those giveaways. But in the long term, over the next year or 2 years, say, maybe I'm making $200 or $300 per reader. So when you kind of look at it in that sense, it makes a lot more sense to build on and focus on the long term rather than the short term.
Mm. And just also, I mean, we didn't really touch on, but for those people who don't know your story, how long ago was it when you were making zero or when you were at that point? How long has it taken you to kind of do that? I know you had a bit of a hiatus in the middle, but...
Yeah, I was traditionally published originally and did very well in advances with the books in itself for loads of different reasons that we don't need to get into right now. But when I got back into independent publishing, I think it was early 2012, I don't think I made anything. I think the first check I got from Amazon rather than me sending Amazon a check would have been 6 months later, maybe, and, maybe for $10 or so, absolutely nothing really to write home about. But it was a light bulb moment for me that I could see that actually I'd actually sold maybe 5 books that month and people seemed to enjoy them. It was slow for the first couple of years, but when I started working out how this all fits together, it's accelerated quickly.
Mm. So I think that's the point. If people listening are making zero or 10 or, $100 a month and they feel like they're putting in so much work, I think both of us have seen that kind of curve where it goes along, bumps along the bottom for quite a long time before it starts ticking up. So I just want to encourage everyone with that. Okay, so let's then tackle the person who's a little bit further on. So the person who might be listening to this because they have already self-published, maybe they have 2 books or even 5 books, or even more than that, and yet they are still still bumping along the bottom and not doing very well. So what would you suggest for someone who has some books but wants to rejuvenate those sales?
I'd say, first of all, look at them dispassionately. Maybe it means if you're looking, perhaps you want to check the covers out. Maybe that means you want to commission a designer to do an evaluation of your covers and compare them to the market. And you might think that could be a weakness. Maybe you could work on that. Maybe you need to look at your blurbs. Maybe you don't have enough reviews. So if you haven't got enough reviews, start to build your email list and then build an advanced team of what we call beta readers. And in exchange for giving them a free copy of the book, you can ask them to leave an honest review of that book. And that's a good way to get some reviews on the page. But you just got to look at things dispassionately and then maybe start to think about some kind of, I wouldn't say kind of next level tactics, but things like advertising. If you're happy that your product and you say your series is robust, then start to send some traffic to the first book in the series. And that could be by using Amazon ads. They're very, very cheap, and they're working pretty well at the time of recording this. It could be Facebook ads, which I'm best known for, not quite so cheap, but very, very powerful. You could look at doing those. You could look at a BookBub promotion or any of the other promotional sites that exist that enable you to get lots and lots of reader eyeballs on your title for a limited period of time. You could lower the prices. You could put one to free. You can put them all to free. There's all kinds of potential strategies that you can employ. And the good news is if you've got five books, you've got ammunition. You're in a position where you can start to experiment with different strategies that are only available to you once you've got that inventory behind you.
Yeah, I think, and coming back, like circling back to what we said at the beginning, that cover, that can be the biggest thing you do in terms of trying to make the reader pick up on things. So even if you pay for ads, if your cover doesn't fit the genre you're advertising in, it's never going to pick up anyway. And I've recently redone the cover and changed the category on my book, Risen Gods, which just wasn't selling. And since we changed the cover, changed the category, and I also reworded the blurb as well, the increase in sales is just ridiculous. I mean, it does sometimes just take an honest, dispassionate look at your book. And sometimes that can take time, can't it? I mean, this is 18 months after I wrote that book, I can actually look at it with a different eye, because often we don't know what we're writing, do we?
No, exactly. And also, that's an 18-month-old book. Well, it's not 18 months old for the new reader who bought it yesterday. This is a new book. So that's another really great thing about the industry that we're in right now. There is no shelf space that we need to get on. We've got infinite shelf space, which means that we can, if we want to, relaunch those five books with new covers, with new blurbs, with all kinds of new content if we wanted to, and then push them as effectively new books. They're fresh and new to the new readers who discover them tomorrow. It doesn't matter that they've been out for 2 years. It's completely relevant.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fantastic. I guess one last question before I ask you about the course. Some people worry that there are too many books in the world, that there are, too many. How do they compete against all of these books, traditional and indie? What are your thoughts on, whether this is the best time to be an author, or is it saturated?
No, it's without any question, it's the best time, I'd say, to be both an author and a reader at the moment. And it's never been easier to put interesting new books into the world that would otherwise 10 years ago would have been stymied by a gatekeeper who said, I'm not interested in whatever your weird fetish is. I'm not saying your weird fetish, Joe, but whatever writer's weird fetish is. So we don't need to worry about that anymore. We can get those books into the hands of readers, and we can make them visible, make them discoverable. There are lots of books. I mean, there's like, I think, 4 or 5 million books on Amazon.co.uk at the moment, probably double that in the States. And that is daunting. But then if you think about it, anyone watching us talk right now is probably within the top 1 or 2% of all authors out there. There are hundreds of thousands of authors in the world, most of whom who publish on Amazon will kind of do what I did and probably what you did when we started. It's kind of put a crappy cover up. Don't do anything right. Close our eyes, cross our fingers, and press publish. And then 6 months later, we've sold a couple of books. The fact that people are listening to us talk have educated themselves to find the kinds of resources that are available like this means that you're way ahead of your competition. So don't worry too much about that. And when it comes to traditional competition, we can run rings around them. Indies are nimble and smart and forward-thinking, and we're clever on price. We're not greedy. We can we prepare to try things that traditional publishing will eventually get around to. I'm starting to see Facebook ads now from traditional publishers. I was doing this 2.5 years ago. So we don't need to. We don't really need to worry about them. You don't need to worry too much about kind of uneducated competition. If you're watching this right now, you're in a really excellent position to get your book out there and start to find readers.
Fantastic. So I think one of the main things that you and I have also done is we've both learned from other people. So both of us have taken a lot of courses, listened to audiobooks, bought books. I mean, every writer has loads and loads of books. And both of us have turned our knowledge into courses to try and help other people avoid the mistakes that people make. Now, you've got this super 101 course. Tell us a bit about that. What's in it? Who is it for?
So it's a broad course. It's also focused at the same time. So it covers everything you need to know from the point where you type the end. So it includes all of the technical bits and pieces, including things like screen flows or kind of watching over my shoulder as we upload a book to Amazon, as we upload a book to Apple, all of the platforms. We look at formatting, how to format it. We have a cover design module. We've got a blurb writing module. We've got advertising promotion, focus on mailing list, what one is, how you get one, the software you need to use. It's absolutely everything that it's kind of written for myself. I try to put myself, go back 5 years and think, what didn't I know? And rather gallingly, I didn't know anything. So I've tried to imagine that I'm instructing newbie Mark as I come to the scene with my first book. Try and make as big a splash as possible with the benefit of what I know now after 5 years of experience. So it's for beginners, and it's also for people who, I say, were intermediate. So we've had plenty of students who have gone through the course and have found that it's refocused them into getting away from bad habits, maybe open their eyes to some things that they hadn't tried before that they subsequently do try and have success with. So it's not for kind of New York Times or USA Today best-selling authors who don't need me to tell them what to do, but it's for people below that and starting out on their author journey.
Yeah. And you know, what I love about it, I went through it, and it's always good to revisit these things. And I think, you know, there is this, again, a sort of myth that self-publishing is really easy. Anyone can do it. You just throw a book up on Amazon. And yes, you can do that. But as you said, you're not going to sell any books. So if people are interested in actually selling some books and making some money, then there are these best practices to follow. So I highly recommend the course. And if people are interested, you can go to thecreativepen.com/101. And if you are watching this on the page, there'll be a button below. And I'm absolutely standing by Mark on this. And I used to have a course on this type of thing, but Mark keeps everything up to date. So I'm now recommending this course as, you know, the one that I really recommend. So Mark, thank you so much. Do you want to just tell people where to find your site and the podcast, which is really useful?
Yeah, you can go to selfpublishingformula.com. The podcasts are uploaded there every week. We go live on Fridays. We can all see them on YouTube. We do live rebroadcasts into our Facebook group. Of course, you can get the podcast wherever you get podcasts from, iTunes, whatever you use. We'll be there.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Mark. That was great.
Pleasure.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Mark today, and remember to register for our webinar on how to get your first 10 book reviews or your next 10 at thecreativepen.com/March12, MARCH12. So coming up next week, I'm talking about how to write high volume fiction in a sustainable way with Toby Neal. And Toby is fantastic. I love her. She really helped me when we did the interview. She helped me reset my writing sails and figure out my direction. And we talk about all kinds of things. So that's coming next week. I hope you find it useful. In the meantime, have a wonderful writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.